Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Vochem Daf Mem Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our Mishnah that we saw on Daf Mem He Omid Beis, it was stated that there are things that are not chayav mishum pikul, as was established in the Mishnah Daf Mem Beis Omid Beis, but yet those very same items are chayav in Nosar and Tumah. The Mishnah said chutz min hadam. That would mean that if one were to, let us say, consume dam, blood, bishogeg, dam that was left over, that became nosar, that was not applied at the time that it was supposed to, within the time proper time frame. So you have a situation of dam that is both nosar and it is dam. Two offenses, in theory, could apply. And the practical bearing would be that if done in a state of shogeg, in a state of unawareness, the person would have to bring two korbonos. But the Mishnah says, chutz min adam, which means that when it comes to dam that happens to be nosar, he is guilty only for dam and not for nosar. The Gemara on Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph, second line from the top, chutz min adam. That's the quote from our Mishnah. Mino hani mili. From where do we know this? That dam is not chayev mishum nosar. We have a little note that we've written in between the lines, and that's Hatshuva Besof HaOmud. The answer to this question will appear much later, quite a bit down toward the end of the page. On the side of our Gemara, in our Shas Ozer, the pre-marked Shas edition that we feature under Gemara markings, in the outside margin we feature topic headings and structural notes. The topic headings are entitled No Say. So here in the outside margin under our No Say heading, we've written in HaGemara Mevia Mekoros. The Gemara will bring sources LaHodikotoni concerning that which it teaches in the Mishnah. The Dam Eino Chayav Mishum Noiser V'Tumah. That if one were to consume blood that happens to be either Tomei or Nosar, he is not considered in violation of Nosar or Tumah. Hamokar lekach ye psukim yutorim shemalamdim didam ein bo meila. The eventual source for this information will be three psukim, all saying seemingly the same thing, that dam has no violation, does not involve any violation of meila. The issue being, what do I need three psukim to tell me the same thing? So eventually the Gemara will answer that these seemingly extra psukim are available to teach me that dam is excluded from not only me'ila, but nosar and tuma as well. Turning to the Gemara. The Gemara had asked, Mano Hanimli, from where do we know that dam is not bound or not included in the realm of nosar and tuma? Omar Ula Omar Kra, we've labeled this as number one. Eventually, we're going to get up to three. We should also note that structurally, we have a very long answer. Long answer marking appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a tuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. The length of this vertical dashed line indicates that all of the lines of the Gemara that are opposite this form the answer. In a couple lines, we'll notice a bracketed section, and the bracket section itself is fairly long, as is indicated by its length marker, which is a vertical dash dotted line that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. We'll get back to that later. So in the meantime, Omar Ula, Omar Kro, Vani Nosativ Lochem. I've given it to you. I've given you the blood of Korbonus. And we darshan shelochem yehei. It is for you as chulin is. Chulin is all that which is mundane, all that which is not sanctified. Something that's chulin carries with it no me'ilo. Obviously, it's yours for your personal benefit. So when the pasuk says regarding dam, it says, and I've given it unto you, that means unto you for your benefit, which in effect is telling you that dam is not shayach, is not related to the realm of mi'ila. Number two, Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tona, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the following Tanaic source was taught, Omar Kro Lechaper, Lechapora Nesativ Velo Lemi'ila, that the dam was given to us for the purpose of achieving atonement. So its role, or its purpose, is atonement, and not to be in violation of Mi'ila. In other words, it's specified. Its role is as a source of atonement and does not entail anything else. Number three, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Omar Kro, Hu. Hu lifnei kapora, kila achar kapora. The dam is prior to its being used for atonement, prior to its sprinkling, like it is after its sprinkling. In other words, it maintains its status quo. Whatever it was, it is before, as it is after. Ma achar kapara ein bo mi'ila, just like after it's sprinkled, there is no mi'ila that's shayach to it. Af lifnei kapara ein bo mi'ila. Likewise, before it's sprinkled, even though it hasn't been used yet, it does not contain or does not involve one who benefits from it with the problem of mi'ila. So, up till this point, we have three psukim that seem to tell me the same thing, that the dam is excluded from the realm of mi'ila. If we skip this long bracketed section momentarily, the length of the skip is indicated by the length marker to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a vertical dash dotted line. If you skim down to the end of that line, you notice on that line the bracket closes. So we continue after the brackets. Utlosa kroi bedam lomali. Three psukim, lochem, lechaper, and hu, those three expressions. What do I need them in the case of dam? In other words, up till now, it seems we have three expressions that tell me there's no mi'ila. I don't need three to tell me the same thing three times. So the Gemara answers, limute mi mi'ila, mi noser u mi tuma. The role of these psukim is to exclude the dam from the realm of mi'ila, and the realm of noser, and the realm of tuma. Aval pigol lo tzarch, but to tell me that dam is excluded from being from the realm of pigol, that I don't need a lo tzarch kro. I don't need a posik for that. Disnan, the Mishnah has a rule that covers the issue of pigol with regard to dam. What does the Mishnah say? Kol shiyesh lo matirin bein lo da bein lo mezbeach chayovin olav mishum pigol. Any item that has a matir, that something else is matir it, so that it is something that's subject to pigol. The dam gufei matirhu. The dam is the matir of the meat. In other words, the dam itself does not have a matir. It is the matir for something else, but it is not the beneficiary of some other matir. Hence, since it's not the beneficiary of a matir, it is the matir for something else. It's therefore not doesn't fit within the realm of those things that are chayav mishum pigol. We have a bracketed section, and that is now going to be the subject of our attention. The last point mentioned just before the brackets was that of Rabbi Yochanan that said, based on the word who, the dam is treated before its use as it is after its use. And after its use, it's clear to the Gemara, it's clear that there's no more me'ilah. So the word hut instructs me or tells me that just like it's clear after it's used in the sprinkling, it no longer, it doesn't have any me'ilah violation that's relevant to it. So too, even before it's been used, me'ilah is not germane or not relevant to it. The Gemara asks, why do you say things in that in a one-directional way? Maybe it should be in the other direction. Emo la'achar kapora ke lifnei kapora. Maybe we should suggest that the way we treat dam is as follows. It is going to be treated after its use as we would treat it before its use. Ma lifnei kapora yesh bo mi'ilah. Just like before it has been used for sprinkling, it can create a mi'ilah violation. In other words, if someone were to benefit on a personal basis from the dam before it's been sprinkled, there is mi'ilah. Af la'achar kapara yesh bo mi'ilah. The chiddush being that even after it has been used, let us suggest that there should still be a problem of mi'ilah if one derives personal benefit. The Gemara rejects this out of hand and says, Ein l'cha davar shenasis mitzvosoi u'moyolin bo. There is nothing, there's no precedent for something that the mitzvah has been performed already on it, and there would still be mi'ilah. In other words, once the mitzvah is executed, is carried out, the item in question no longer bears a, no longer would generate a mi'ilah penalty. So we've dashed underlined this expression is a key expression, which will be the subject of the Gemara's analysis in the upcoming rows. So just for the sake of hammering the point home, let's read that line again. Ein l'cha davar shenaseis mitzvasoi u'moya linbo. And therefore, we can't say that the dam will be treated after the kapora, like before kapora, and say, well, just like before kapora there is mi'ilah, so too after kapora there is mi'ilah. Because that point seems very clear to the Gemara that it is not so. Namely, that after kapora there certainly is not going to be mi'ilah. And therefore, if you want to make any comparisons before and after, you would say that just like after it has been used there is no mi'ilah, so too before it has even been used there is no mi'ilah. The Gemara now has a series of questions and answers, and that's featured on the outside margin under our, we have a tat nosei, the subtopic heading, Ein l'cha davar shenaseis mitzvasu molen bo, as we just emphasized. You don't have examples of things that have been all, have the mitzvah has already been performed and there still is mi'ilah. Then we have the mivneh, which is a structural note. You'll notice a triangle is featured with its point facing up. This is and later the triangle will be flipped over, point facing down. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. So with the point facing up, they represent questions, kushios. And with the point facing down, tshuvos, answers. The Gemara will be weaving back and forth, and hence the triangles will help us keep track of where we're holding at any given point. So the Gemara asks, after hearing this rule, that Ein l'cha davar shenaseis mitzvasu molen bo, v'lo, is that really so? V'harei, trumas hadeshen. Trumas hadeshen is the handful of ashes that are removed from the mizbeach in the early, we'll call it the end of the night or the pre-dawn moments. During the pre-dawn moments, a Kohen rises to the top of the altar and takes a handful of ash and places that on the ground to the side of the ramp leading up to the Mizbeach. We know that Trumas Hadeshen, that special, we'll call it the handful of ash, even though it's ash, it's the subject of, or it's the result of korbanos having already been offered. That's the clearest case of Naseis Mitzvah, so the mitzvah has already been performed, so to speak, and the Trumas Hadeshen carries with it a penalty of Mi'ilah. In other words, if one were to benefit from those ashes, even though they're Naseis Mitzvah, so there still is a Mi'ilah problem. So what do we see? We see that you can't claim that Ein L'chodov Shenaseis Mitzvah So Umol En Po. Here we have an example of something that's Naseis Mitzvah So, and yes, there is Mi'ilah. The Gemara answers, before we get to the answer, let's go over this last point. So we have the precedent of something that is Naseis Mitzvah So, and there still is Mi'ilah, and that's the Trumas Hadeshen. So if that be the case, we could go back to the case of the Dam, and let's say learn from the Trumas Hadeshen to the case of the Dam, and say that even after the Zrika, there would be Mi'ilah. Gemara says, no, I'm not going to learn from Trumas Hadeshen to something else. Mishum dahavi Trumas Hadeshen ubigdei kahuna shneik suvim aboim keachod v'chol shneik suvim aboim keachod ein malamdin. Because the case of the Trumas Hadeshen and the halacha that applies to the bigdei kahuna are, let's mention what is the law regarding the bigdei kahuna. This is a reference to the begodim, the clothing of the kohen gadol that he wears on Yom Kippur, the four white garments. After the Yom Kippur service, he's then the pasuk says, "Upashat es bigdei habad," etc., and it says, "Vehinicham sham," that he removes the Yom Kippur four white clothing and leaves them there. He puts them there, is what the pasuk says literally, and we understand that means they are buried. So we have the clothing that were already used. It's Naseis Mitzvah So. And the Torah is instructing you must bury them. In other words, it would be forbidden to benefit from them. What does that do for us? So we have Trumas Hadeshen, something that where the mitzvah was already performed, and it remains also prohibited to benefit from it, to benefit from those ashes. And the Big Day Love on the white Yom Kippur garments of the Kohen Gadol also must be put away. That creates a situation of what the Gemara calls Shnei Ksuvim HaBoyim Kechod. You have two psukim, or two topics, Trumas Hadeshen and Bigdei Kahuna, that are coming to tell me the same thing, that namely that even though the mitzvah is done, they remain forbidden. They remain forbidden, and there would be a problem of Mi'ilah. The rule, though, says v'chol shnei ksuvim aboyim keachod. Whenever you have two psukim coming to teach me the same principle, in this case we have two examples, Trumas Hadeshen and Bigdei Kahuna, coming to teach me the principle that even though the mitzvah was done, there still is mi'ilah. We say ein melamdin. They cannot serve as a precedent for something else. Hence, as far as trying to learn from these things, Trumas Hadeshen and Bigdei Kahuna, to the case of the Dam, and then to claim that the Dam, even though the mitzvah was performed, there still is Mi'ilah, that is simply not true, because I cannot learn from Shnei Ksuvim HaBoyim Kechod. In effect, the idea, or the fact that the Torah teaches me the same thing twice, it's trying to communicate the following idea, that this issue, this problem of Naseis Mitzvah So, and still being also applies only to these cases and not to anything else. Had it taught it only once, I would say the Torah is setting a precedent. But the fact that the Torah teaches it twice, the Torah is trying to say, as we just said, I want you to know that it's only in these two cases that this applies, and in every other case, we would say what we dashed underlined before, that there's that a Dover Shenaseis Mitzvah So, there is no longer Mi'ilah. Trumas Hadeshen and Bigdei Kahuna being exceptions. So the Gemara goes on to say, Ha Nicha L'Rabbanan, this idea that we said that Bigdei Kahuna and the is part of the Trumas Hadeshen as being Shnei Ksuvim HaBoyim Kechod works out according to the Rabbanan that's the Amri that say V'hinicham Sham, that the pasuk V'hinicham Sham, which appears in the case of the clothing of the Yom Kippur service, Melamed Shetu'unim Genisa, that pasuk teaches me that they must be buried, they must be put away so as not to benefit from them anymore. And if that be the case, then I have Shnei Ksuva Bohem Gecha, not only the Trumas Hadeshen, but I have the Big Day Kuna, which whose source is Vehini Chamsham. Elo the Rabbi Yosa, the Amar Mutar saying the Kohen Hediot, Ulbavashali Shtamish Ben Liom Kippur Acher, my equal Amemar. But according to Rabbi Dosa, that the four big day kahuna, Kohen Godol of Yom Kippur, are mutter. They are allowed for a Kohen Hedyot, the rank and file Kohen, to use them while he does a vote in the Beis HaMikdash. And the only restriction that the Torah accounts for is not to use them for another Yom Kippur. They were used for this Yom Kippur. They're now put out of service with regard to further Yom Kippur use. However, they continue to be used by regular Kohanim. So then, the Gemara concludes this question by saying, "My equal Amemar." What we've basically just described, according to Rebbe Dosa, the Big Day Kahuna are not an example of something that is Nases Mitzvaso, and still there is Mi'ila. Because according to Rabbi Dosa, the Big Day Kahuna are still in use. They're not put away. They're not put away, indicating the fact that what we said before is that when they're put away, it shows us that there still is Mi'ila that's Shayach to them. Here, they're not put away. So I don't see that there's any Mi'ila problem associated with the Big Day, the Arba Big Day Kohen Godol. And if that be the case, so then we don't have Shnei Ksuvim Haboim Kechad. We only have Trumas Hadeshen, which conveys the idea that once, even though the mitzvah was done, there still is a Mi'ila problem. So why don't I learn from that to the case of Dam, that even though it was sprinkled, it was used already, there is a Mi'ila problem, and if there's a Mi'ila problem after it's been used, so even before it's been used, there should be a Mi'ila problem. The Gemara answers, Mishum dahave trumas hadeshen v'eglo arufo shnei ksuvim haboim keachod. V'chol shnei ksuvim haboim keachod ein malamdin. So, very simply, we took out the Big Day Kahuna from the equation of shnei ksuvim haboim keachod, but we are now going to replace it with Eglo Arufa. Eglo Arufa is a situation where if a murder victim was found between two cities, and we don't know who the murderer is, so the city closer to the murder victim, wherever he was found, they provide a calf, and without getting into all of the details of the procedure, this calf's neck is broken, and that serves as an interim atonement for what happened. That's the Eglo Arufa. Now, the halacha is that the Eglo Arufa, once its neck is broken, the mitzvah was performed, it is to be buried. One is not allowed to benefit from it. So here you have another example, in addition to the Trumas Hadeshen, of something whose mitzvah was performed already, and still benefit is prohibited. And as such, I have Shnei Ksuvim Haboim Keachod and Ein Malamdin, and hence I won't learn from them to the case of Dam having Mi'ila after that Dam, after it's been sprinkled, would carry with it Mi'ila. Not so. That phenomenon of a mitzvah having been done and still there is Mi'ila, that's the case only by Trumas Hadeshen and the Eglo Arufa. Ha nicha l'man de'omar ein malamdin. And all of this is fine. We can leave Dam out of the realm of Mi'ila by saying, well, shnei ksuvim b'ochad ein malamdin. So I cannot learn from Trumas Hadeshen and the Eglo Arufa. Elo l'man de'omar malamdin ma'ikol me'mar. But according to the opinion that says that shnei ksuvim b'ochad could serve as a precedent, so then I have Eglo Arufa and Trumas Hadeshen, two examples of things where Naaseh Mitzvaso, and there still is Mi'ila. So maybe we can apply that to other things, and in our case, let's apply it to Dam. So Ma'i kolomemar means what are you going to say as the source for saying that dam is excluded from the realm of mi'ila? A few more answers. Trei mi'uti ksivi. Namely, if you had any thoughts of learning from Egla Rufa and from Truma Sadeshen, perish the thought, because the psukim themselves indicate this very point, to memayate other things from mi'ila after the mitzvah was done. Ha-chok-siv, ha-arufa. And we understand that to mean this and not something else to be like this. Namely, the arufa is also even though the mitzvah was done, but not anything else. Ha-chok-siv, with regard to the Truma Sedeshen, it says v'somo, and you shall place it, that it is placed. It's placed to the side of the ramp leading up to the Mizbech, where it in fact miraculously is absorbed into the ground. So this and is the only thing that's placed there and not something else. When we say not something else, we're trying to say that the placing of this, of the Truma Sedeshen by the side of the Mizbech, is an indication that there still is a problem if one were to benefit from it. And we're saying this, there is a problem and not something else. So we, by virtue of the fact that there's this mute in the Torah, we're telling you cannot learn from these things to other topics, and in our case, to the dam. Utloso kroy bedam lomali. As we saw above, we had lochem, lechaper, and hu, three psukim, seemingly indicating the same thing, that there's no mi'ilo by dam. Well, what do I need to tell me the same thing three times? The answer is I'm really not telling you the same thing three times. I need it limute mi'ilo. One pasuk is memayet dam from mi'ila. Rashi says the word hu that we saw above serves this role. And minosar, the one of the psukim, and Rashi explains the word lochem comes to exclude dam from a nosar penalty. And umituma, the word lechaper will come to exclude the dam from tuma. So we saw that lochem excludes it from nosar, lechaper excludes it from tuma, and hu excludes it from meila. Avol pigul lo tzorech kra. The idea that dam is not chayev mishum pigul, that if one eats dam inadvertently, that was part of a korban that experienced pigul, so he would not be in violation of pigul. Why? Destan kol shiyesh lo matirin bein lo bein lesbeh chayavon lo mishum pigul. Those items that have a matir, they can be guilty of pigul if one had an incorrect thought concerning them. V'dam gufei matiru. Dam itself is the matir, but it doesn't. It's not the beneficiary of a matir. Hence, there is no pigul that's shayach to it. Om Rav Yochanan, shlosha krisus b'shlomim lama. Rashi cites the psukim that are relevant. There are three psukim in the realm of a korban shlomim that all teach me that there's a possibility of experiencing kores. If, let us say, one was tomei and ate korban shlomim meat, so he would be chayav kores. And this point seems to be taught three times. So the Gemara accounts for the three psukim. Achas leklal v'achas leprat. In other words, two of them will be darshened as a klal uprat fashion to darshan and say the following, just like shlomim are kotshei mizbeach, so too anything else that's kotshei mizbeach, that's sanctified for the mizbeach, carry with it the penalty of kores if one eats them betuma. this would actually exclude things that were not dedicated to the Mizbeach, things that are dedicated, let's say, to the temple repair fund. Those kind of things, if someone dedicated, let's say, food to the temple repair fund, and the person came along and ate that in a state of tumah, he would not be chayav koris, because the food that was dedicated to the Berek HaBayis was not dedicated to the Mizbeach. So in that sense, it's not like a shlomim. And the third pasuk is v'achas l'dvorim she'enon ne'echolen, things like the wood or the lavona that are used on the Mizbeach. If a person ate the wood or the lavona, which are basically really not edibles, but if he ate them while tomei, he would be chayav. Ula Rabbi Shimon diomar dvorim she'ene cholim ein chayav v'nalehen mishum tuma. According to Rav Shimon, the wood and the lavona are not covered by the Isser of Tumah. In other words, according to Rav Shimon, if one was Tomei and ate the wood or lavona, he would not be Chayav Kores. So then, what do I derive from the third Kores that we alluded to before? That's L'Suyei Mai, to include what? L'Suyei Chatois HaPnimios. The third pasuk comes to include the internally processed sin offerings. Those are korbanos whose dam one sprinkles in the heichal. So you'll ask, what do I need a special riboy for chatos apnimios, that they are covered by the prohibition of tumah? Well, Sakadai Techamina Hoyo Vyomar Vishimon Kol She'enoi Al Mizbeach Achitzon Kishlomim Ein Chayav Noshom Ein Chayav Nolov Mishum Pigol. Since Rabbi Shimon has been known to say, and we're right now within Shitas Rabbi Shimon, he has been known to say that those types of sacrifices that are not processed on the external altar, like a shlomim is, of course, processed. The Zrikas Adam of the shlomim are done in the courtyard Mizbeach. So anything that doesn't have that characteristic, Ein Chayovin Olav Mishum Pigol. So since Rabbi Shimon said that things that are not done on the outside Mizbeach don't carry with it any pigol, mishum tuma nami lo l'chayv, I would have thought that there's no tuma problem either with regard to those kind of things. And we're talking right now about the chatos hapnimios. Kamash mlan, the extra posuk of kores by the shlomim, is telling me this point, that chatos hapnimios are related or shayach to the realm of tumah. And it would come out that if someone would eat the meat of the chatos apinimios, even though they're destined to be burnt outside the Beis HaMikdash, as according to the Torah's dictate, but if one were to eat it while tomei tumas haguf, he would not be chayev. Numi Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon spoke and said, Es shedarko lechol, things that are edible, that one would normally eat, is chayav. Chayav means there's a chiyuv tumah on those things. And we pointed out that Rabbi Shimon was coming to disagree with the Tanakhama, because Rabbi Shimon was saying only edible things carry with it a tumah penalty, but inedible things, like the Eitzim or the Lavona, they would not be chayav mishum tumah. Itma, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yezir, Rabbi Chanina. We have pairs of Rabbonim. We've numbered them and lettered them. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are known as a pair, and Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yezir, Rabbi Chanina are known as a pair. So therefore, we called Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish 1 and 2, and Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yossi Aleph and Beis. Chad mehai zuzo, v'chad mehai zuzo. One from this pair and one from the other pair. So you have, in effect, two pairs of Rabbanan. So Chad Omar Machloikis Betumas Boser Avo Betumas Aguf Divrei Hakol Eino Loke. The Chad Omar Ki Machloikis Bezu Kach Machloikis Bezu. Let's go over this again. One side, or one set of opinion, says that the Machlokas Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanan regarding the wood and the Lavona, That's with regard to Tumas Boser. Tumas Boser is a borrowed expression, which means that the item became Tomei. So their machlokas is what would happen if someone eats them, the Eitzim Levona, while the Eitzim Levona are Tomei. According to Rabbi Shimon, there would be no penalty, and according to Rabbanan, that would be Chayev. Avol, Betumas Haguf, Divrei HaKol, Eino Loke. But as far as the Eitzim Levona being consumed by a person that is Tomei, let's say a person that's Tomei ate the Eitzim Levona, which were Tohor, everyone will agree, Divrei HaKol Eino Loke. Now the everyone is going to, it comes to include even the Rabbanan, who were willing to Mechayev Tuma with regard to Eitzim Levona. That's true only in so far as the Eitzim and Levona, the wood and the Levona, are themselves Tomei. But if the person who's eating it is Tomei and they're Tohar, according to this opinion, there would be no guilt. And no guilt means even according to the Rabbanan. V'chad omar k'machlokas bezu, just like there's a machlokas with regard to Tumas Boser, and Tumas Boser, as we said, is a borrowed expression. Just like you said, there's a machlokas with regard to the case of the Eitzim Levona themselves being Tomei, kach machlokas bezu, so too in the case of Tumas Aguf, there is a machlokas. My taimo, what's the reason for this? What's the basis for this? So, the pasuk says, "Kevan to Karino Bay Vaboser Asher Yiga B'chol Tomei." Since we can refer to them as having absorbed Tuma, and the Rabbonon say about this that if they have Tumas Boser, meaning the wood and Lavona themselves absorb Tuma, the Rabbonon say there's Malkus for eating the wood or the Lavona. Karina Bay, we will also be able to refer to them the Tumasoi Olov, which means that there is a problem if the person himself is Tomei and eats them, the Eitzim Levona, which are Tohor. In other words, there would be Malkus for that as well. So if you're asking the Mai Taima, what's the basis of the Shitas Rabbanan, that there is a problem not only while the person himself is Tomei. Of course, what we're doing right now is we're explaining this second Chad Omar, that just like there's a machlokis with regard to Tumas HaBoser, there is with regard to Tumas HaGuf, and the Rabbanon who say that the Eitzim Levona are covered by the Isur of Tumah, this opinion is saying it doesn't matter whether it's Tumas Boser, whether the items themselves are Tomei, or the person is Tomei. Either way, he would be guilty. And so we're answering the basis for that opinion is the fact that you have in Pasuk Yud Tes, it says, V'Boser Shiga B'chol Tomei, and that's coming to include Eitzim Levona that themselves are Tomei. The statement in Pasuk Chof will also apply, that says, Tumaso Olav. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a double underlined name with dots in it. This is the conclusion of the first of two Lashonas. We should have mentioned this a little bit earlier, but this section of Gemara is covered by two versions. And this was pointed out above under our Nosei Mivne heading. You see a Roman numeral number 1 and 2 that are encircled with a double lines with dots in them, and we've written in Shnei Lashonos b'Machlokas Amoroyim, two versions featuring the Machlokas Amoroyim k'dei lahasbir haMachlokas bein haChachomer v'Shimon. This Machlokas Amoroyim is coming to explain the Tanaic controversy between the Chachomer v'Shimon b'inyan chiyuv tumo b'eitzim ulevona, regarding the issue of tuma is related to Eitzim and Lavona. So at this point in the Gemara, we now read Rav Tavyumi Masni Hochi. That means everything we've learned from the Roman numeral number 1 that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a few lines up, from that point till here, this is Rav Tavyumi's version of things. That's Rav Tavumi Mas Nihochi. Now, Rav Kahana Mas Nihochi. Rav Kahana has a different presentation of the Machlokes Amoraim. Chad Mehai Zuzo, V'chad Mehai Zuzo, Asefa. So the this pair of Rabbonin, you have Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lozer, or Rabbi Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yisro Chanino. So one of these pairs is states as follows, and this Rav Kahana version, by the way, has them referring to the Sefer. The Sefer is Reb Shimon's point in the Mishnah where he is arguing on the Rabbonin, and he says that Reb Shimon says there's no Malkus for the Eitzim Levona. Chanomar Machloikis Betumas Haguf. One of these pairs of Amoroim said that the Machlokes Tanoim, Rabbi Rabbonin and Rabbi Shimon, is in the case where the person himself is Tomei. And we'll add here that only in that case will Rabbi Shimon say that there's no Malkus. Aval Betumas Bosor Divrei Hakoil Loke. But in the case of the Eitzim Levona themselves being Tomei, so according to this Amoraic opinion, the Divrei Hakol, that means not only the Rabbanan, but Rav Shimon as well, would say there is Malkus. Because you're talking about Tumas Vosser, namely that the Eitzim Levona themselves are Tomei. V'chad Omar, Machlokes Bezu, Kemachlokes Bezu, Kach Machlokes Bezu. And the other opinion says that just like there is a machlokis between Rav Shimon and Rabbonon with regard to Tumas Haguf, so too with regard to Tumas Bosar, their machlokis would continue. And according to Rav Shimon, also by Tumas Bosar, there would be no Malkus, where the item themselves, the Eitzim Levona themselves are Tamei, there would be no Malkus via penalty generated. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have provided a little chart you can see on the inside margin, which is designed to set the different opinions straight. So over the top line, you have two columns, Tumas Bosar and Tumas Aguf, and down the right-hand side of the chart, you have a Roman numeral number 1, which is Chad Omar. The Chesav is Chad Omar and Chad Omar, representing the two pairs of Amoroyim. And you have a Roman numeral number 2, also Chad Omar this and Chad Omar that. And according to the Roman numeral number 1, as you go across, with regard to that Chad Omar, Chad Omar number 1 in Roman numeral 1 said there's a machlokis betumas bosar, but with regard to tumas aguf, everyone will agree no malchus. The second Chad Omar in under Roman numeral number 1 said there's a machlokis betumas bosar, there's a machlokis betumas aguf as well. When we go to Roman numeral number 2 on the chart, to make things a little easier, the number 2 under Roman numeral 1 and the number 2 under Roman numeral number 2 will be saying the same thing. So that all we have to focus on is in order to determine where is there a difference between Rav Tavumi's version and Rav Kahana's version, you focus on this case. This is case number 2, and we're looking at the chart, which has a machlokis betumas bosar. The machlokis Rav Shimon Rabbanan will be by tumas bosar. And the machlokas will continue with regard to Tumas Haguf. That's the first presentation, the Roman numeral number 1. Roman numeral number 2 has, under the case of Tumas Basar, everyone agrees. Tumas Basar means when the Eitzim Levona themselves are Tamei, everyone will agree that there's Malkus for Tuma. And that's as far as Tumas Bosar is concerned. Tumas Aguf, what happens if the person himself is Tomei and he's coming to the Eitzim Levona to eat them? That will be the case of Machlokes. where we had the Rabbanon saying that there is Shayach Tuma to it, and Rabbi Shimon saying no. The last Haromar we pointed out is the same as the Haromar just above as well. So we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rava, Mistabro kemad Omar kemachoikis bezu kach machoikis bezu. It's most likely that that is the boast of the proper approach to take. That just like there's a machlokes with regard to tumas bosar, so too there was a machlokes with regard to tumas aguf. My taimo. Kevon delo karino bay vitum osoi olov inichrisa. With regard to the Eitzim and Lavona, the fi Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the dea that we saw in the Mishnah that says only things that are fit for eating are covered by tumah. So since we cannot refer to the Eitzim and Lavona, the pasuk that says vitumah soi olov inichrisa, because it's not shayach. The expression tumaso olov is simply not shayach to the Eitzim and Lavona. They're not shayach to tumas aguf. So we also will not refer to them lo karina bay vabosar ashiga bchotame lo yeochel. If we look at the Rashi just across from here, he says kevan de lo karina behu beitzim levona the Rabbi Shimon v'tumaso olav the tumas aguf lo karina behu vabosar ashiga v'chule. So as we know, according to Rabbi Shimon, he holds that Tumah applies only to the case of edible things. So, since we don't apply to the case of Eitzim Lavona, Tumah So Alav, where the person is Tomei and eats the Eitzim Lavona, of course, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not edible, so there's no penalty. Lo Karina Bei, we also will not refer to the Eitzim Lavona, that the Eitzim Lavona would become Tamei. In other words, we don't say that about them. The Gemara asks, V'omar mar v'abosar l'rabois Eitzim Lavona. We have a Gzeres HaKosov that includes Eitzim and Lavona with regard to Tuma. The Gemara says, L'poisla b'alma. This source is a really a chumra de rabbanan, a stringency of a rabbinic nature, and the posuk that's cited is just an asmachta bi'amo. It's a mere a device to remember something, but it's not an official Torah level prohibition. And as a result, of course, there would be no malchus. That's what the Gemara concluded by saying the post labiyama that Eitzim and Lavona that come into contact with Tuma, it's a chumra derabonan not to use them. The Mishnah. L'shem shisha dvorim hazevach nizbach. When a sacrifice is offered, there are six things that are to be borne in mind. L'shem zevach, that means that it should be slaughtered as with the proper status or name of the korban in mind, as opposed to slaughtering one kind of korban and having another kind of korban in mind. That would be called shinui kodesh. L'shem zaveach, one must have the actual owner in mind and not someone else. L'shem Hashem, for the sake of the Almighty. L'shem Ishim, This is an expression that will be dealt with later in the Gemara. L'shem reach, you must be offering it l'shem reach to produce a good smell. But what are we trying to exclude by that? That the Gemara will deal with. L'shem nichoach, to create a sense of pleasantness. V'chatz rosham l'shem chait. Chatz rosham are offered with the those are sin offerings, so they have to be offered with the sin that was violated in mind. Om Rabbi Yossi, shamati she'af mi she'e shelo hoya b'livo l'shem echad mikol elu kosher. So Rabbi Yossi says that I've heard that someone who had none of these things in mind, none of these expected ideas in mind, it's kosher. That's reading that again. Af mi shelo yablibo l'shem echad mikol elu kosher. And why is that? Shehu t'nai beizdin. There's a court stipulation, so to speak. The court stipulation indicating that a korban, when processed, is processed automatically with these things in mind. She'ein hamachshava holeches ela achar ha'oved. The Rashi points out, shehu t'nai beisdin, sheishchat stam. It's a court stipulation. This term, by the way, is coming on heels of which Rabbi Yossi says, af mi shelo hoya b'libo l'shem echad mikol elu kosher. Even if someone did not have any of these things in mind, the korban is kosher, because it's a court stipulation that the korban shall be shechted. Rashi says, shehu t'nai beisdin sheishchat stam, that the korban should be shechted, in fact, without any specific mindset. Kinamon perakama hisu bezin the lo lemo lishmoi. Bezin made a stipulation that the person bringing the korban should not announce that he's doing it lishmo. Dilmosi lemeimar shaloshim, because if you institute his needing to say that I'm doing this lishmo, he can easily come to say I'm doing it shelo lishmo. Could be maybe his tongue gets stuck. Instead of saying lishmo, he says shelo lishmo. So the court stipulates, don't say anything. And, of course, the korban is still kosher. Rashi continues, Shein ha-machshava hilochas ela achar ha-oived, hilkoch i-omar, i-have omar shelo lishmo. If the kohen who's processing the korban would announce that he's doing it shelo lishmo, afogav the bailim amri lishmo, even if the owner said that I have in mind that it should be done properly, lav midihu, it would have no benefit. The lav midihu taya milsa, because it's not totally in the owner and what he thinks. Dechtiv hamakriv oso lo yechoshev. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. Sheina machshava holechas ela achar ha'oived. The machshava is determined by the one who is actually offering it. Turning to the Gemara, Omar of Yudomar Rav, we have a structural note on the outside margin, the Mivneh, the Havlotas Kavonos Horutzios. We're going to be emphasizing the expected, the proper Kavona, and then, as we go on in the Gemara, what is this coming to exclude? So, Rav Yudomar Rav tells us, Oilo L'shem Ola, that a person is supposed to offer an Ola with the Ola in mind. Vafuke L'shem Shlomim Delo, to the exclusion of a person offering a Korban Ola and bearing in mind as if it were a Korban Shlomim. Ishim L'shem Ishim. The Mishnah said that the, amongst other things, supposed to be done L'shem Ishim. In our Mishnah, we saw it's supposed to be l'shem zebach, so the Rav Yudom Rav is telling us an ola is supposed to be done l'shem ola. Ishim is l'shem ishim. La'afuke kivovo delo. Let's take a look at the Rashi here. The word Ishim is a reference to the fire, that you're offering the korban with the intention of putting it as a korban for the first time into the fire. Vafuki kevova, Rashi says, Almanas la soso chatichos sluyus begecholim. So one has to do it, has to put the meat into the fire, l'shem putting it in the fire, as opposed to having in mind the purpose of it turning into roasted meat on coals. Continuing, Reach, the Mishnah had said that it's done l'shem Reach, that means l'shem Reach, lafuke evorim shitzolon vehelon delo, as opposed to taking limbs of a korban. Let's talk about a korban ola, which eventually is burnt completely on Mizbeach. What we're trying to do here is exclude a case where he roasted the limbs outside, on some fire outside of the Mizbeach, and he roasted them, he then puts them on the Mizbeach. That would be incorrect, and that's what's conveyed by this idea of the reach, the shem reach, to the exclusion of evorim shetzolon vehelon delo, the exclusion of limbs that were roasted and then placed on the mizbeach. The Omer of Yudah Marav, evorim shetzolon vehelon, evorim, limbs of a korban that were first roasted and then placed on the mizbeach, ein bohem mishum reach. They do not fulfill the requirement of the reach. Rashi takes this on a more literal basis, that once they were roasted off the marocha, they no longer produce the smell of roasting meat, because they were already roasted. Nichoach l'shem hanochas ruach. As far as a person can say these things, we're talking about the offering of korbanos for the purpose of appeasing the Almighty, if you will. Nachas ruach lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu, as Rashi says. Lashem, it should be done. Lashem, l'shem mi she'omar v'hoya olam. That one is offering korbanos in conformity or in fulfillment of the will of the one who said the world shall come to be, namely for the purpose of you're offering the sacrifice for the sake of the Almighty, and he is the one who's described here as Misha Omar V'Hoya Olam, the one who said the world shall come to be. That's the Almighty. Omar Rav Yudah Marav, we have a diamond that appears here, and under our Mivneh heading, we have a diamond featured, and we've written in Chatos Sheshochta L'Shem. So we'll have Rav Yudah Marav talking about a Chatos that's slaughtered with something in mind, and a few lines later, you see Rav Elazar also discussing this point. So the Gemara continues, Omar Rav Yudah Marav, Chatos Sheshochta L'shem oila psula. If you shechted the korban chatas having in mind that I'm doing this as an ola, that would be possible. However, l'shem chulin kshero. This is a rather surprising shita, that if you were shechting the korban chatas with a l'shem chulin, meaning as if it were mundane, so it would be kosher. Omar Rabbi Elazar. My taima. We said that if you do it l'shem ola, it's possible. If you take the chatas and do it l'shem ola, it's possible. But if you do it l'shem chulin, it's kosher. What's the basis for saying that? My taima derav. The pasuk says, "V'lo yichalu es kodshei b'nei Yisrael." And from this we darshan kodshim mechalin kodshim. Only the mindset of something else that is holy has the capability of ruining the korban chatos. The ein chulin mechalin kochim. However, having in mind this as a mundane animal, that would not ruin something that has been dedicated as a sacrifice. Mosiv Rabba, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Af mi shelo haya belibo l'shem echod mikol elu kosher shehu tnai beizdin. We want to draw an inference from this. Taimo shelo haya belibo klal. Why is it kosher? Because he had nothing in his mind when he was working on the korban. Ha haya belibo l'shem chulin. However, had he had something in mind, even if that something happens to be l'shem chulin, it would be posel. So, how can you say above that if he does it l'shem chulin, it's okay? And here you see that having in mind the inference that we're drawing, having in mind while you're processing the korban and you think it's mundane, that would be posel. Amale Abaye Dilma lo haya klal. If you had nothing in mind, then that's kosher umaratze. It's kosher and is acceptable. The korban is not only kosher, but also serves to, let's say, appease the Almighty. Ha hoya belibo l'shem chulin kosher v'eino maratze. However, if he had in mind chulin, even though it's not another kind of korban, the korban would remain kosher. In other words, the chatas that you're slaughtering and processing, even though you did the slaughter of l'shem chulin, the chatas will still be kosher v'eino maratze, but it doesn't really appease. So the mosiv, which was brought in to show that having something in mind would create psul, the lamaskona, we're not saying that, but rather we're saying that there are two situations, having nothing in mind versus having chulin in mind. And each situation is treated differently, as the Gemara just explained. Amar Rav Elazar, chatas sheshachta l'shem chulin kshera, mishum chulin psula. If he took a korban chatas and slaughtered it with having chulin in mind, it's kosher because of what we saw before. Chulin is not mechalal kochim. Mishum chulin, that means that while he's slaughtering the korban chatos, he thought it was an actual chulin animal. That is psula. Kedabo minei shmuel merafuna. Minayin lemisasek bekochim shu posel. From where do we know that someone who is misasik, this is an effect, means his mind is on something else. He has no kavona for shchitas kochim. His mind is on something else. And so where do we know that one who is slaughtering or is processing kochim in that state of mind, shu posel? Shenemar, the posel says, v'shochat es ben habokur lefnei Hashem. And we darshan ad shitehe shchita l'shem ben bokar, that the shchita should be done with the korban in mind. Amalei zu biyodenuhi, that we already know, that one is expected to have a focused mindset when he's processing a korban. La'akev minaber, from where do we know that if he doesn't, he doesn't fulfill his requirement? Amalei lirtsonchem tizbachuhu. Let's, before we go further in the Gemara, we mentioned that from the pasuk of l'shachar esben abokol l'fnei Hashem, we supposedly would learn that the shechita has to be done with the right thing in mind. So to that, we saw a response that he says zubi yodena, we already know that la'akev minayin. From where do we know that if you don't have, in other words, if you have another korban in mind, that it will become posel? From where do we know that? And in other words, that this issue of having the right thing in mind is binding. Amalei liritzonchem tizbachuhu, which means l'daitem zavichu, that when you slaughter the korban, you must have the correct mindset in your mind. So from the fact that we have, in effect, this idea of we saw that you're supposed to have a focused mindset from the first pasuk of Shachar is Ben Abba Lefnei Hashem, and we have this Lutzon Chem Tizbul. They also, you have to have the right mindset. So we see that this is repeated in the Torah, and hence it's Me'akev. And just to summarize, then the question, the most recent question had been, from where do we know that Misasek Bekoshim is Puzzle? That would be a case where you're, even though you're working on a korban, a sacrifice, you're thinking that you're working on something else. So from where do we know that that is a problem? So we saw two psukim cited. We had Shachas Ben Avos Hashem. And then we had Lirtzoinchem Tizbachuhu. So the repetition of this idea that one must be focused on the fact that he's working on a korban shows us that if he would be misasek, it would be posel. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.